그래서 이거가 있었습니다.
디피스.
경제 위기 때문에 경제 관련 법이 더 중요성이 커지고 있습니다.
Like we've told you, we have a unicameral parliament like yourself, but we have a semi-presidential system, so it's a bit different from Korea.
What
kind of difference? We share the legislative powers between the government and the parliament.
Same as Korea.
Yes. But you have a presidential system?
Yes.
There's a presidential system.
We have
the
a semi.
Also, the right to present people.
Yes. Yes.
Same with your
yes. In that case, it's a bit different because our president doesn't have the right to initiate laws.
Same.
It's different from your case.
Same.
Yeah. No, no. The parliament shared legislative competence with the government and the two legislative assemblies from the autonomous regions. So it's a shared competence. As you see in this slide, the parliament is the main legislative body, so it can legislate in everything about every issue, about everything except from the organization of the government. It's only the government that can legislate about its own organization, but then the parliament can legislate about everything. And there are some subjects where only the parliament can legislate, such as elections. For instance, the electoral law, it's only the parliament that can legislate. The political parties, the state budget. So there are some examples over there. Do you want to translate? Or?
So there's a specified parliament. The elections and political parties, state budget.
It's only the parliament that can legislate. Yes. And then there are some issues where they share the competence, the government and the parliament. And the parliament can authorize the government to legislate, such as the definition of crimes, the tax system. That's, there are some very important issues where is the parliament who should legislate, but it can give an authorization to the government to legislate.
Do you understand?
You understand?
Some members are only the government, only the parliament.
Only the parliament,
But the organization of the government is not proposed by the parliament.
Okay.
Yeah, by the government, actually. And you showed the examples exclusively related to competence, the question is related to competence.
Mm-hmm.
So you can refer to that. Basically, I can understand all that. Yeah.
Okay. So the entities that may present proposals to the parliament to legislate, there are four entities in global terms. All the members, all the deputies can present proposals to legislate. I think it's a bit different in your case because you should have at least a number of MPs to present a draft law, 10 or something like that, isn't that so? In our case, one only MP can present a draft law. And also the government, which are called government bills. The two autonomous regions can also present draft laws to the parliament. And finally, there is a very important right for citizens because a group of electors, 20,000 electors, can present draft laws also to the parliament. We have changed this law recently because this right is on the constitution that I gave you. But we have also a law that allows citizens to present this kind of draft law to the parliament. I don't know if you want to translate. They understand? Okay. So, now some numbers about it. And it's interesting to state that we have a lot of draft laws presented. The last 3 years, we have these figures here for the last 3 years, and the members and the parliamentary groups presented 945 draft laws, so there's a lot in the last 3 years. But they only get approved more or less 30% of the draft laws they presented. So it's not a lot of draft laws that are approved. Most of the approved draft laws, of course, came from the government. And nowadays we don't have a majority government. We have a socialist government, which is a minority party in the parliament, but is supported by two left-wing parties, and they can manage to have a sort of government solution nowadays. But it's interesting to say that it turned the attention very much to the parliament, because nowadays the most important issues are negotiated here and the parliament. And the government that is in functions nowadays only get to a bill, only can approve a bill, if they negotiate it very strongly in the parliament.
Can I put it?
Of course.
You said that the government and the MPs, can MP become the cabinet member?
No.
Okay.
It's incompatible. We have a statute for MPs, and it states all the cases of incompatibilities, and that's one of the cases.
Okay.
If an MP is nominated for the government, he has to leave the mandate, yes, to renounce to the mandate.
So he can be appointed as a government
yes.
member?
Yes, of course. But exactly, yes. He has to leave the mandate here. So, as you see, most of the draft laws that are passed in the parliament come from the government. But as I said, it takes a lot of effort from the government to see it approved. And it's also interesting to say that most of these laws that are approved in the parliament and that are presented from the government, when they are approved, they are completely different. Is a previous way, because they have to be negotiated. É constituições. Ah, é para dar? Não, já demos.
One more question.
Yeah.
The statistics, 945 was presented by the MPE, and 119 by
yes,
the government.
By the government.
And
yeah.
In the government, is there any agency to support less related works, like in the parliament?
Yes.
Ministry of Justice, or it's the Ministry
of Justice? Yes, yes.
Less related offices.
Yes, besides the Minister of Justice, there is a specific cabinet that supports the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also a very recent entity that was created. I think you are going to hear about it in the university,
mm-hmm.
because the head of this unity will be there. It's called UTEIL. It's a new entity that deals with impact assessment, regulatory impact assessment, in government.
Is the government officials required some qualification, like the legal or economic background?
Yes. They have training, specific training,
mm-hmm.
For legal drafting, for impact assessment. From time to time, they
training are. Training in government agency or?
It depends. It can be in the university. The former government had an agreement with the university to have a specific training in these subjects. Nowadays, I'm not very sure how it works. I think it's not a priority of this government.
Okay.
But, for instance, it was a priority in the government of João Tiago Silveira that will be with you in the university. So I think he will explain that to you.
Okay, sorry for
the topic. No, it's okay. It's okay.
You by the regulation and negative by some
So what of in terms of the law relating with EU, is it something by government or parliament?
Yeah.
The EU related laws or acts, is it something by government or parliament?
Não respondo.
Eu leio
no país, diz tu. Diretivas?
Sim.
In terms of EU legislation, there are different kinds of legal acts. So the ones that have to be transposed are directives, which leave, they are decided at the EU level, and then member states are given a certain period to transpose that legislation into national law. That can be done either by the parliament or by the government. I don't have the data with me, but I would say that overwhelmingly they are transposed upon the initiative of the government.
Sem dúvida.
Eu só me lembro de um caso.
Mesmo sem ser necessário, muitas vezes sem ser necessário.
The most objective answer would be no. Because, I mean, let's go a little bit backwards. In an ideal world where the parliament is involved in the scrutiny of EU affairs throughout the procedure, the European Commission presents a proposal, let's say on energy, for instance, on the prices of energy. This is presented by the European Commission, it's presented to the legislators, European parliaments and the Council of Ministers of the EU, and at the same time it is sent by the European Commission to national parliaments of the EU member states. Okay? At the same time. National parliaments of the EU member states are given 8 weeks to say what they think about that certain proposal, which the Portuguese parliament does. I'm talking about an ideal world which is written in the law, okay? Then this opinion of the parliament about that directive, that proposal, is sent to the European Commission. In that moment, the parliament, without any mediation with the government, is able to say what the parliament thinks about that proposal based on the impact assessment that the commission did, the European Commission, or can ask the government or any other entity or expert for more information on that specific proposal. Okay? Then this 8-week window is closed. Then the negotiation follows at the EU level. The Council of Ministers, where the Portuguese government is represented, and the European Parliament, where Portugal has 21 members of the European Parliament. This can take 6 months or 6 years. If the Parliament is to follow, if the Parliament thinks that a certain dossier on energy is priority for the Parliament is to follow that negotiation and ask the government at each meeting of the Council of Ministers of the EU what is being decided, and if the Portuguese interests that the Parliament highlighted are being defended or not. So when the moment comes for the transposition to happen, meaning that when the EU law or the EU legal act is adopted, am I going too fast? No, it's not too short. It's the deadline that is written in the treaties. It can be too short in many cases. It can be long in other cases. So, but the idea is that all the European legislation goes through national parliaments, directives especially, go through national parliaments before they are discussed by the European institutions. This is something that maybe you are not aware of. All the European legislation is sent to national parliaments so that they can voice their opinion. Okay? Then, their opinion, what the parliament thinks about a proposal, about the impact of that proposal, about the national interest that proposal affects. Then, when it is negotiated at the EU level, the Portuguese government is also scrutinized by the parliament regarding that negotiation. So if the government goes and says, well, for us, energy should cost 5 times more, and the parliament says, well, no, you cannot approve that because it's too much, there are impacts on the population, etc., etc. So in the final moment, and going to the question, when the parliament is called to transpose the EU directive into national law, a procedure and an exchange of information and views took place already in the previous period that can last for 6 months or can last for 10 years in some cases. When the government sends the draft bill to the parliament to transpose the directive In general, if I'm not mistaken, no other studies or data is sent. It's just, this is the directive. The directive says you have to write on white paper with black ink, and it cannot have more than 10 pages. That's what the government sends a draft bill saying. The directive says this, so this is our proposal. And then the parliament transposes in general. This is a very general overview. But at that point, no other impact assessment is done. The parliament can ask for impact assessments or further explanation from the government or from the EU institutions in some cases.
Okay. So we have here a scheme of the function, the way that functions the legislative procedure. We have all the phases since the legislative enters, the is presented. She goes to admission by the president of the parliament. He passes a phase of the consideration by the committee, and then. Like in any other parliament, a discussion on and vote on general principles, and then on a discussion and vote on the details. The discussion and vote on general principles normally occurs in the plenary. The discussion and vote on the details normally takes place in the committees. Afterwards, the committee prepares a document that comes. We'll see a little. It's a document, the final text prepared by the committee, and is going to the final overall vote. Normally, it's always the final overall vote is always done in the plenary meeting, and then when we have a text of a legal initiative that is approved by Parliament in a plenary session, what it occurs? We have a phase that is the final wording. What is the final wording? It's to see if the text has to be transformed, adapt. You have to see if the text is according with all the remissions are okay, the legal references are okay. Normally, it's a proposal. There is a proposal from the staff from the parliament to the committee saying this text has to be with suggestions of to change the text, but they cannot change the normally, it cannot change they make suggestions for the style, to improve the style, to improve the scheme of the initiative, and some suggestions that have to be with the wording of the document, but they cannot change really the spirit of the law. Sometimes it has to be changed a little bit more because the legislative procedure is a little bit faster than it should, and we have to arrive to the final wording, and you have to see with attention the text of the law, because the rest it was seen during the phases before, but the wording of the initiative has to be seen in this. It's the last opportunity to see if the law is not approved with published with errors, if it doesn't go forward with errors. So it's an important phase to the quality of the law. This is something that the final wording is something that occurs in the committee and has to be approved with no votes against. So if there's a one vote against, it will not be approved, and in theory it goes to the plenary again, or it will be the text that was approved in plenary that has to be to go to publication. Before publication, we still have a phase. It is sent. The initiative goes to the enactment of the president of the republic, and it still has a sort of a confirmation by the prime minister. and then it goes to publication. If it is enacted by the President of the Republic it has the confirmation by the Prime Minister, it goes to publication in the official journal. We talked about the quality of law according to the final wording, but that's something that has a lot of inputs. We want, with the quality of law, we want transparency. Transparency is done by the whole process of the legislative procedure. We try to have to do hearings and consultations, and we have a document that Bruno will talk about. That's the technical note. That's a document prepared by the staff of the Parliament to accompany the opinion given by the committee. We have the final wording as a phase two that can improve the quality of the law. And we have republication. Republication, it's something, it occurs when we have an initiative that proposes a modification of a law that exists already. You have a proposal, an initiative that has a modification of a law that exists already. So, if if it is the third modification of that law, or if it's a big change of that law, you should propose the author of the proposal should propose to the republication of that legislation. And republication is very important for the citizens because you have the old law, all the law published with all the modifications. You have a republication with all the modifications included so that the citizen has the last text of the law. It's very useful for the citizen. Sometimes it's very difficult to do a republication because sometimes committees or even the authors don't defend the republication, and we arrive to 8 or 9 or even a lot of more modifications of the law. And for the citizens, it's very difficult to know the exact text republicated. Now the official journal of the Portuguese official journal has a work to republicate, but it's not an official republication. It's an effort of the staff of the official journal to republicate, but it's not the official version. The official version of a republication is always done by the parliament or the government. Okay.
You said that the laws that have at least
More than three. Yes.
And when the amendments imply change of 20%,
yes,
or text of law, so the law have two criteria, both have two criteria. At least three amendments and imply a change of 20%.
Each one of the criteria can be a justification for the republication.
And then, what is the change of 20% or more text of the law? Small change? Is it provisions?
If a law, it's a very little one.
With 10 articles, you
yes.
have two amended and you have to republicate. So.
Yes.
It depends.
It depends on the dimension of the law.
Anyway, it's okay. And one more question about procedures. You said
yes.
about the procedure of initiative and permission. Permission and consideration. What is the permission? According to the Korean procedures, the minimum member level PM prescribed by law, proposed the law, there is no admission like threat or the state. They just propose, and then they are the National Assembly are supposed to accept it. Just the administrative procedures, not admission like state.
But you're talking about the admission by the president of
the legislative initiative. And admission and the consideration by the committee. What do you mean by admission?
Admission is the act of the president. After the presentation of the initiative, the initiative always goes to the president of the... By the president itself, the speaker, the president of the parliament. Yes, the speaker. Yes. He gets an information by the parliamentary staff saying, doing an appreciation, a simple appreciation, if the initiative is in accordance.
Before the parliament considers the legislation, there is admission.
We have several stages to control the constitutionality of the draft law.
Okay.
And this is the first stage to control it. When it enters, it is up to the speaker to see if it respects the constitution and the law, the legal framework, all the Portuguese legal framework. For instance, our constitution states that we have a republican form of government. If it is a draft law that proposes a monarchy, it is against the constitution, so
it shouldn't be admitted.
The speaker can reject it. Of course, when the speaker rejects a law, there is always a right of appeal to the plenary. So an MP can present a draft law, and the speaker, based on a former evaluation of the services, it is the plenary support unit, the unit of my colleague, that does this first review on constitutionality. And according to the advice of the services, the speaker can reject or admit this draft proposal.
But normally, excuse me, just a little note. Normally, it is not very common that the president rejects the initiative, because it has an understanding that it should be the plenary. The rejection on the subject, the conformity of the initiative should be done by the plenary,
so
informed by the committee.
The initiative can be rejected before it is on calendar.
Yes.
In Korea, once the legislative bill is proposed by the MPM,
it's the problem.
And then it was put on the calendar of the National Assembly.
It's immediately
put. Immediately considered. And then the committee can hear it.
Okay.
Can reject it. But before it was enrolled as an initiative or agenda, there is no stage to be rejected by the president or by the speakers.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's the thing.
Okay. I don't know where I was.
You have a much simpler legislative procedure than ours. Yes.
We have a lot of phases, really.
Yes. We have the floor.
Okay. So about the parliamentary committees. The parliamentary committees are another organ of the parliament. As we discussed briefly over lunch, they have a role within the legislative process, but they also have a role in terms of transparency and outreach to the general public. We highlighted some of the features of the work of the committees that, according to what we've read from your brochure and also from the questions you asked, we found that were more relevant for you. Firstly, the possibility that committees have to propose that bills are put to public discussion. The idea behind this is that the parliament needs to know what the stakeholders think about a certain draft bill. This is mandatory in some cases, for instance, the labor code, all the legislation regarding working conditions, etc. Or it can be decided by a parliamentary committee that a certain draft bill or a package of legislation is so important that we need to hear the population, we need to hear the stakeholders. This happened very recently with housing legislation, because it's, maybe you know that because you live in Portugal and in Lisbon, housing is a very thorny issue nowadays because the prices went up, there's a certain bubble in the housing market, there are not enough houses to rent, etc., it's really expensive, so this became a national issue. So the member of parliament who is somehow steering this discussion from the Socialist Party decided that this was, even though the law does not oblige the committee to do so, she decided that it was so important that we needed to make a public consultation. Then the contributions are gathered by the staff of the committee, and it is sent to the members of parliament of that committee and also to the rapporteur, so that these contributions are then channeled into the opinion that the committee is to adopt. Okay? On the other hand, also the committees can organize regularly hearings with members of government. According to our rules of procedure, all members of government, every minister has to be present at the parliament at least 4 times for each legislative session. This is the minimal requirement. This is mandatory, so it is negotiated within the parliament and the government the exact dates. This serves so that every quarter they come to the parliament and debrief on their activities as members of government. And on the other hand, the committee can also decide to summon ministers to come to the parliament to clarify a certain dossier or to give explanations about a certain policy field. And the committee can also ask other public entities to come to the parliament to explain. An example, in terms of regulators, the regulator on energy, the regulator on telecommunications, they come to the parliament often. A couple of weeks ago, we had the president of the railway company present in the parliament as well, because it's also another national issue nowadays, the quality or lack of quality of the railway transport in Portugal. So the president of that company came to the parliament to present explanations. Thirdly, the committees also organize public hearings. These public hearings can serve so that stakeholders come to the parliament and voice in person their opinions. Am I going too fast? No, it's okay. Voice their opinions on a certain policy field, for instance, children's rights or energy or housing. There was a massive public hearing on housing. More than a year ago, there was also a public hearing on the organization of the land with all the stakeholders, because some of them disputed the way the country is organized from an administrative point of view. And this is something that committees are doing more and more, because it shows that they are concerned about what stakeholders think, not only in writing, but also bringing them to the parliament to see members of parliament face to face and say face to face what they think about a certain bill or a certain package of proposals. Finally, the committees can also ask advice of independent experts, specialized bodies, or simply the target people. In many cases, and some committees already have a checklist of entities to whom they ask for an opinion. The Committee on Education usually asks opinion to the trade unions, etc. The Committee on Constitutional Affairs usually asks opinions to a certain number of stakeholders, so to say, as well. And this is something that is very important for the Parliament and also to the outside of the Parliament, because there's a certain, let's call it, legislative culture that also thinks that if stakeholders are involved at an early stage, it will somehow not only take their opinions on board, but also smoothen their reaction when the bill is implemented. Okay? Pode passar ao próximo. With regard to a very specific question that you also asked, and which is one of the most salient features of our work, the technical note that accompanies, in principle, each draft law. This technical note was established in 2007. We had a very profound revision of our rules of procedure. This was introduced in order to, on the one hand, release members of parliament from the more technical and detailed appreciation of a certain draft bill, and also to allow members of parliament, when they are drafting the opinions, to focus on the political perspective and the political reach of that opinion. So the technical part was ascribed to the services, to the support. So the technical note is drafted by a number of people from the four different units. It is coordinated by the committees. So the committee to whom this draft bill is sent to is the one that coordinates. So it's the one that triggers the procedure to draft the technical note. It's the one that collects the contributions, that collates the contributions in the end, and that sends it to the rapporteur. And there are a certain number of features, namely the fact that, again, talking about an ideal world, you have seen how our legislative process is on paper, and this is what I will refer to, because then in real life it sometimes changes. But in an ideal life, this is from the moment the draft bill is sent to the committee. The committee has 30 days to issue an opinion, which can then be prolonged. The technical note is to be drafted in 15 days, okay? So that the member of parliament who is to draft the opinion then has 15 days with the technical note in front of him or her to draft the opinion based on that technical appreciation and focusing on the political perspective. This is the main idea behind it. There was also a concern, which was a very important concern, with the quality of legislation. So the more the services are involved and the more the technical insight is deepened, the more the legislation that will come out and is not left to members only to appreciate the technicality is ensured. Okay? On the other hand, this gives the staff a great responsibility, because this deals with many different dimensions. Because the technical note addresses very different issues, as you can see. It analyzes the situation, so meaning the sector and the reach and the impact that legislative initiative can have. Also the problem which is underlying that initiative of the government, of a parliamentary group, or of the autonomous regions to present this draft bill. And on the other hand, if it is deemed fit according to the rules of procedure of the parliament and the constitution as well. That analysis is also done. Then the legal framework is also set out, including the European perspective. If there is a directive or a regulation or any other European EU level, because as you can imagine, the majority of our legislation is inspired and has to be conformed with what the EU legislation is. So that analysis is also done. In some cases, the comparison with other legal regimes, Brazil, New Zealand, United States, etc., is also presented. So if there is something in those legislations that is relevant for this case, our services aim at putting that also in the technical note, so that the member knows that this is not only a Portuguese problem, but it's a problem that affects other legal regimes. Finally, a list of other pending and European draft legislative acts on the same matters, especially to let the member know that this is the first time someone presents an initiative on that topic, or if there were already 20 or 30 initiatives on the same topic, or petitions, or European legislation on that, so that he knows that he's dealing with something completely fresh, or something that was already thought through several times. There are some challenges in this regard. Firstly, the deadlines are short. Members also say that the deadline for them to draft the opinion is short, but 15 days to draft a technical note with this level of depth is challenging for the staff, especially because we are not overstaffed, on the contrary. In some cases, committees have one person. two persons, it's a normal rule, two advisors, and the advisors in the different units, in the plenary division, in my division, they have to be experts in many different fields, because the expertise, they don't do just that. If something new arises, they have to go and study and try to go a little bit back and try to understand what is the reach. And that is it's demanding, it's also intellectually challenging, and can also be rewarding. But on the other hand, it requires a certain level of criteria to see which are the most relevant aspects to put in the technical note, especially because members, we usually say that they don't read more than two pages. If we have a technical note which is excellent, has covered all the angles, but has 50 pages, maybe it's not worth as much as something which doesn't cover all the angles in so much detail, but goes direct to the point that bill is supposed to address in five or six pages. Me, I'm a fan of five or six pages instead of 30 myself. But this requires experience, expertise, and knowledge of the fields. Then on the other hand, which countries to analyze if we are to compare? Because there is a linguistic barrier. We don't speak all the languages. There is a distance because we don't know all the legal regimes, and that can also be a challenge. On the other hand, when we are talking about initiatives from the government does not, as you asked already earlier, does not send to the parliament all the studies and the impact assessments that they have carried, even though they are obliged to do so, which somehow restrains and limits the scope in which the technical note and also the opinion of the member can be done. And in some cases, the political compromise goes against legislative quality, because in some cases, members of parliament and the political parties want to rush and present something really fast, which is not really well drafted. It is scheduled to be discussed in the plenary next week, so there's no time to draft a technical note. So that can also be a problem. I don't know if you have any questions at this stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
How long?
Usually.
30 days. Normal time limit, but you can reduce it to 20 days if there is urgent matters. Yes.
Or you can prolong it in the case that I referred to in housing. The member who was steering this debate, she was expecting a flood of contributions, but that flood did not occur. So she decided to prolong the deadline, expecting that other opinions would come eventually.
They draft the bills, or they just propose kind of initiation, and then somebody draft the bills.
They present
the
a draft.
The people draft themselves.
They present a draft.
Okay.
With the articles, they have to present with the articles.
Okay. What is the number?
How many proposals?
Yeah.
Well, until now, since 2003, we have had six proposals.
Six proposals.
And only two of them became a law.
Okay.
So it's not. That's why we recently decreased the number of citizens that can present this kind of proposal.
What was the subject matter?
Before it was. You want the subject of these two laws approved?
Yeah.
One was about the right to exercise architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So it was initiated really by a citizen, but by an MP.
Mm-hmm.
She's an architect, so she organized that draft law. And the other one is about labor, is rights of the labor.
Okay. And then technical law. So is there any... it's the form of technical law?
Yes. There is a layout. Sorry, go ahead, go ahead. There's a layout, yeah. It's in Portuguese.
To the legislature of parliament, you know, the record.
Sorry?
It is kept as a record in the archives of parliament.
Oh, it's kept in the archive, yes.
Oh, yes. It's published online. It's online. It's published.
It's internet.
Yes. So the technical note, what we usually say is that it follows the initiative throughout the whole procedure until the end.
So it's accessible to
yes.
Anybody.
Yes. It is published together with the opinion of the committee, and it follows until the end.
It's kept in the system. If you want to consult some initiative a later one, you can see what technical note it was made for that initiative. It's always present. It's always sexual. It's the same thing now with the admission notes. Admission notes, some years ago, it was not available, accessible, but now it is. You can also consult admission notes and see what suggestions were made by the parliamentary staff.
And there's the layouts, mm-hmm. and the layout, this is our internal one. Mm-hmm. So this is the topics that it covers. From what it has eight different headings, seven different headings, this one. And this is our internal one, and in front of each one, it's the service responsible for it.
And you said that the time limit is 15 days.
Yes.
Is it implied or technical?
Well, it depends. I mean, we are Portuguese and Southerners, so there's a certain degree of flexibility in it. But I mean, the deadline is imposed by the political timing.
Anyway, so
it's a guideline, but it's. I mean, there's a wide band, but it cannot exceed more than 1 or 2 days, because then the member of parliament starts to ask, "I need a technical note to draft my opinion. So when is it ready?" So we try to comply, but of course, people who do this do many other things at the same time, so they have to reconcile everything. Yeah. Also, the technical note also verifies if the bill complies with the law governing the form of the bills. There's a law that has a checklist of all the items that the draft bill has to, from a formal point of view, respect. So also it's
a law for the publication. It gives instructions, so the format of the law in terms of publication in the official journal. It has some requirements that you have to follow. Okay. Yes.
So you check the compliance with the constitution.
Also that, yes.
Is there any constitutional court in Portugal?
Yes.
Oh, you have constitutional court?
Court, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Pretty much with Korea.
Yeah.
Then also there's a very important point which we are heavily working on, which is the consideration of the consequences of the bill's passage. This is the impact assessment. What are the consequences and the likely cost of this implementation, which is something that we are working on. We are trying to develop a methodology to address this in a more in-depth way, not only because it is needed, not only because it is written in what we have to do, but also because we have just finalized an assessment, a critical assessment of this technical note with the participation of all the services involved. So we drafted a questionnaire addressed to the staff that works on this and also to members of parliament. Members of parliament did not massively reply, but those who replied, one of the points that they highlighted the most as the one that they deem relevant, it's precisely this one. So the one that we don't do so deeply as we would like to, but we are working on that. Finally, as I said before, the committees have this routine of asking for contributions and opinions and consulting stakeholders. This is also referred to in the technical note, and me and Claudia, we are trying to persuade people that when they draft technical note, it's not enough to list who replied, but we should draft a short summary of who said what, because the idea is that members don't have time to read the whole span of contributions, so the staff is supposed to provide that. So if we have already some contributions, in some cases we still don't have the contributions, but in those cases where we have the contributions, a short summary should be put there to the benefit of the Member of Parliament. Finally, in this part about committees, there's also another feature. Which is what we called legislative compilation. So this is a work which is done between the committee's support unit and also the division for parliamentary information, legislative and parliamentary information. And this is a list of the relevant legislation in a certain policy field. The idea is that this serves not only the committee, the staff of the committee, the members of the committee, but also the outside public. So if I want to know what is the legal framework existing in those domains, which are the ones that we have now, if I'm not mistaken. There's also health is there. Yeah, it's also, everything is there. Não está o ambiente, por acaso, mas devia estar. Mas devia estar aqui, também não está. You just click, it's available on the website, so any citizen can go there and click and see, okay, if I want to know in defense, in the area of defense, which is legislation, it is listed there with hyperlinks. It has, we are working on that as well. We will try to produce the compilation also nowadays on foreign affairs, and we are confronted with some methodological issues, especially because international agreements are now incorporated through a resolution. And the methodology defined for this says we can only list laws. So since 1982, if I'm not mistaken, we don't transpose international agreements by law. So we are trying to, together with the other units, to not only develop the fields covered by this, but also to fine-tune the methodology so that it is more clear, more transparent to the outside. Okay, and I don't know if you have any questions on this. If not,
yeah. You showed some examples about the legislative compilations. Defense is included there.
Sorry?
Defense. Not too transparent to properties, only the internal issue of government. So it's not just curious.
A bit secret.
Well, I mean, if you click on that and if you know a bit of Portuguese, you won't know any state secrets. I'm looking at it right now, and it's mostly the law on national defense. So how are the armed forces organized, army, navy, etc. So this is in general. Also, a very important part of our defense is the international cooperation, our presence in many different military theaters and the cooperation with other countries, especially the Portuguese-speaking countries, Angola, Mozambique, etc. And that's pretty much it. I mean, legislation on state secrets, the national defense concept, the sea, but it's not, it's just the general legal building. It's not any too much detailed where we have our troops stationed, etc.
Yes. Yes. If you speak of information about troops in foreign countries, the minister can come to the defense committee and it can be not an open meeting like the other committees.
Behind closed doors, yeah.
Yes. But,
do you have the database which contains all regulation, everything, or which the people can access to any law or regulations?
Yes.
Do you have it on?
Yes, we are all transparent.
Yes.
In what comes to the legislative procedures, yes. From the moment the proposal enters to the Parliament until the moment that it is approved, everything is public. Everything is transparent.
Not ones from the government. The government is not very transparent in its legislative procedure. Government is not transparent, but the parliament is very, very transparent.
The committee's work are open to the public, and we have a parliamentary TV channel, so most committees are broadcasted. And so all
you are representative of the people.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yes, it's normal.
Okay.
Okay. We have spoken of compilation, and that's one of the.
our rules of procedure, the government draft bills should be presented, submitted to the parliament with these documents. These documents that would help parliament to appreciate the initiatives. So, but these documents are not sent. Normally they are not sent. And so committees sometimes call, ask for the government to send these documents, but sometimes they really don't come. And there is no sanction for not delivering these documents to the Parliament. So the legislative procedure has to work without these documents. And it's not sometimes easy to evaluate inside if we don't have all the information from the government about this, these draft bills. And sometimes it's draft bills from the government are very technical. And it's very difficult for the Parliament to be aware of the difficulties and all things that are in the reason for proposing the draft bill. So it's not very easy. The government should help the Parliament and deliver these documents.
I don't think so. So the legislative bill is proposed by the MP. It's over 900. A huge number of legislative leaders and, of course, MPs. How this small group of experts can do the effective assessment?
It's very difficult, really. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we provide a questionnaire, and you provide also simple answers. But I did not forget one specific question. You know, the legislation based on affirmative action means we try to cure prior discrimination or different discrimination. But if the perfect society, we do not need affirmative action because without the kind of legislation, the system doesn't work perfectly. So once that legislation was made, but we still continuously try to evaluate the society. Oh, now we don't need this kind of legislation anymore. So in terms of the perspective of the Congress, your position, how you try to evaluate those kind of discrimination, and now we don't need this kind of law anymore. So. It means how you can try to impact those kind of society situation. You know, I guess.
That should be an ex post evaluation after the execution of the law, the implementation of the law. We should see if it, the law that corrects the inequalities still is needed. But yes, please.
Of course, this ex post evaluation is very important, and it depends on the field. But for instance, an example of affirmative action in terms of gender balance, the law on parity, the law, to simplify, that establishes quotas for the underrepresented gender to be elected for parliament, for instance. Nowadays, we have a quota of 33%. According to the government, the current government, and this is my personal interpretation, this experience went so well that they now proposed that the threshold is 40%. So 40%, and there's a bill here, a draft at the parliament being discussed at committee level, that says that for all elections, namely the parliament, European parliament, etc., the lists have to be made, the lists of candidates, with at least 40% of the underrepresented sex, which nowadays it's women, but in the future can be men. So those men who now complain about it, maybe in the future they will benefit from it. On the other hand, it says that the first two on the list have to be from different gender. And it also says that, for instance, if you elect three, one man and two women, if the man renounces, the next one to take his place also has to be a man, even if the next on the list is a woman. So this is an example of how maybe this the government, they must have some sort of studies or assessments saying that, okay, this parity law has made representation in the political bodies across the country more balanced. So it's time to go one step further, from 33% to 40%. This is an example which is a bit far-fetched, but it can respond a little bit to your question.
There's a field where it's easy to make post evaluations because you see from the electoral results if it works or not. But some cases, like labor code and some cases of affirmative action laws, it's very, very difficult to have post evaluations. And I think there we can learn a lot from your example because you have this strategic institute of yours that can do post evaluations and can study long term, and we usually don't do that very seriously in Portugal, so we have a lot to learn from you in that point.
I think the ordinary procedure of legislation, the affirmative action problem, and the law reform are reflected every when you propose legislation. You will perceive this current situation, whether this law is good or it's outdated or something like that. My question about the formulations is that you enumerated the labor code, the law on political parties, the labor law, the enterprise law, and something like that, but the law on political parties. Political parties represent the peoples, and the political party, it is natural for each political party to be small, large, you know, based on the people's popularity. Mm-hmm. So, is it the right area for open protection? What kind of open protection is required for political parties? If you are only one member of a party or just one member, I mean, to any more, what is the name of the any more label?
It has to do with main organs of the political parties.
Yeah. So the electoral law, it's okay.
Yes.
It's,
yeah.
I think
it's understandable.
From creation, so. And then the political party, what kind of a conviction?
Yes, I understand what you say, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's more like a declaration of principles from the political parties, but they have it in their law.
Yeah.
It's a very informative on your presentation.
Okay.
We have just two last slides on the main challenges. One challenge which affects, I would say, virtually every country, more democratic or less democratic, but it's the disaffection of citizens, because citizens have a certain expectation. In our case, I could say that citizens have an even higher expectation regarding the parliament. Even if a decision is taken by the government, it's outside the parliament they demonstrate. So this just, I mean, if you would stay here until Wednesday, you would have a huge demonstration of taxi drivers outside the parliament, which is scheduled for Wednesday, because the government proposed a draft and the parliament approved it on the regulation of Uber and those kind of operators. And of course, taxi drivers are not enthusiastic about it. But the parliament, on the other hand, in the last 10, 15 years, has been trying to move towards these expectations of citizens, developing tools like the ones we referred to, consultations, public hearings, this outreach, but also other instruments like petitions, for instance. The possibility that one person can submit a petition to the parliament, or to the government, or to any, referring to the parliament, voicing any kind of concern or an injustice that this person felt, and then this is accepted or not by the parliament, it goes through committee, the committee can call that person to come to the parliament and express these difficulties. One example, which is an example with mediatic impact, there was one Portuguese citizen who was kidnapped in Mozambique 2 years ago, and his wife is struggling in many different fora to try to know where he is, if he died, if he's alive, if he's in jail. And she filed a petition in the parliament. She was received by the speaker, I think, to give this petition. And the parliament has to respond to this anxiety of citizens. If the parliament does respond, it's a whole different question. Maybe you can discuss it in your next visit to Lisbon. But the parliament... It's an evaluation that we have to do ourselves and members of parliament. But the idea is that there is this disaffection, and the parliament is trying, through transparency, this mobilization of resources towards the citizens, to address that disaffection. On the other hand, e-parliament, and we can talk here now about this idea of a parliament 4.0 that we are trying to put in place. The parliament has a new website. We have developed our internal IT tools to the full extent possible so far. Everything is pretty much digital nowadays. We still have work in progress, not only internally, but also with the other organs, with the government, with the constitutional court. But internally, we have a new website. We have ideas on social media, how to interact, how to be on social media, to be or not to be. It's sometimes the question that we deal with. Some more enthusiastic and more, I would say, 21st century minds in the parliament want to have a presence on social media. More conservative approaches say, well, we don't want to interact too much because then citizens will respond. Maybe they will insult us. Maybe it's not going to be so polite towards the parliament. But there's a balance between it, I think, myself. We have, as we try to demonstrate, also a high level of accessibility of information. Pretty much everything is on the website. We have a common concern of replying to citizens, and we receive many, and José Manuel, that is now deals with the dissemination of the what we call the citizens' mail, which is the question that citizens send to the parliament on many different fields, which are sent now to the Cabinet Secretary General and then disseminated across different services. And also transparency. On impact assessment, we have gone through it thoroughly. We need resources and we need the expertise, and we are working on that. On the timing and planning, we face a difficulty, which is, on the first hand, there is no legislative planning. The government has a program, and we know more or less what the government will try, will attempt to legislate, but we don't know how or when. I mean, we don't know that in October, when October we have the budget, that we know. But in other different fields, sometimes it pops up, and the parliament has to adapt to it. The parliament itself does not have legislative planning, because it depends on the will of political parties and members. And on the other hand, if we were to do our job in the most rigorous and, I would say, sharp way, we need time. And sometimes the time for the support, it's very different from the political timing. You can plan your work, you can plan the technical notes, you can plan all the legislative support, but then suddenly a bill comes on a certain outbreak of a disease, for instance, and we have to adapt to it. On reducing and simplifying, the current government is trying to adopt the motto, less is more, legislate less, but better. So previous governments would legislate virtually every week. This government decided that it will legislate only once a month. Transposing this to the parliament is a challenge because members of parliament want to legislate every day. They want to show that they are doing something. So the balance between these two dimensions is sometimes difficult, but I would say that it is gaining traction in our legislative culture that to be better, the legislation has sometimes to be less, but more beautiful. That's it.
We don't know.
Thank you for coming and for sharing information. I think, as I said, it is important that we can continue giving each other information, and obviously you can count on the Portuguese Parliament to be active in this exchange of information. Of course, that you are going to have a meeting with other colleagues that deal with this question, but anyway, we are more than happy to exchange information and I just refer to what Bruno said by the end of his intervention. Now he was saying that MPs would like to have something. I was thinking about those who work in a factory; they need to see the final product, and our legislators, our MPs, would do the same. Our Secretary General, 2 months ago, was saying 44 laws in 1 year. That means more or less one law per week. That can be considered too much. In the framework that we live now, we think that we have to simplify, we have to reduce the number of laws and let the country goes without so many laws. But anyway, it is a balance between many principles. And once again, thanks for coming, and have a nice flight to Brussels, to Antwerp, and we'll still stay in touch. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having us, and especially Vice Secretary General being with us, lunch and conference, and your presentation very, very interesting and productive. I think this discussion enriching our knowledge and experience for the researchers and me. And as Deputy Secretary General mentioned, I think with this meeting, we will strengthen and widen the cooperation and the relation. Thank you very much.